session number 23139, reel 5.
Bob Soller's reel 5.
Yes, we stopped for water. They allowed us out of the train. And it happened to be in a spot where Yugoslav farmers were around, and we were allowed to go to the tap for water. And at that point, the Yugoslav farmers were selling peregrines, or not, what do they call that fruit?
Pomegranates?
Apricots and things like that, that type of fruit. And of course, we had very, very little money left. But they accepted Greek money, which one or two had. My friend Jim had a little bit more than I. And we bought a little bit of fruit. And he also bought an egg. Now, this was rather funny because he bought the egg, but he wouldn't eat it raw. He had no means of cooking it in any way. I said to him, I said, for goodness sake, Jim, all you've got to do is we'll prick it both ends and suck it out. Or break it, and but no, he said he couldn't eat a raw egg. I said, what, not in your condition, in your situation? No, he couldn't eat it. So the answer to that one was, I had to, and I did. So on we went on to the one more incident there. On that junction, it was a sort of a junction there, was a German troop train, which was carrying a lot of ammunition, a lot of tanks, and most of the Germans were sitting on top of the tanks. And I remember very vividly that I happened to approach the one German on sitting on a tank on the truck and wanted some, asked him if he had any food. And quite friendly, up to a point, not arrogant. And I had a pencil of which my aunt had given me, and I still had a propelling pencil, and it was silver. And he saw that, and he said, it's for bread. So I gave him this silver pen for quite a large portion of bread, which was a considerable help between Jim and I. And after that, we continued on. It was terribly stifling, excepting when the train's on the move. But when it stopped and we couldn't get out, they wouldn't open the doors. It was very, very hot. Eventually, we got to north of Yugoslavia into
Austria.
Well, I was going to say we stopped and disembarked in this place which, God, why do I forget these names?
Not Mühlberg?
No. Oh, this annoys me because I had it in my mind just now.
Klagenfurt?
No, Klagenfurt's in Austria. This is a part of northern Yugoslavia which was annexed to Austria. In Croatia, but this is the town Marburg, which was called Marburg then, but now, of course, it's back into the Croatian, and it's called Maribor. We disembarked at Marburg, and we were put into an area of which the building looked like a warehouse, of which trains. Our trains could disembark us, and we were then allowed only at night into the warehouse. During the day, we had to be in the grounds around. And there we were for I don't know how long, and of which the Germans would bring up, the cook would bring up his tank full of soup and a little bit of red bread. Which was all the rations were allowed. And at this place we were registered and given a number and a tab, tab that you wear around your neck. We were there for a while, And then they transferred us from that warehouse into an old barracks down the town. Well, that was a little better, but it was a very old barracks. And whilst we were there, we were put out into working parties daily, of which, with a guard, we'd march out to a building site. And then in the evenings, we were marched back, given soup and a little bit of bread, and that's all we were given. In the mornings, we were given mint tea only. Very refreshing, but no other food, only the small piece of bread and soup at night. So we saved a bit of the bread for breakfast with the mint tea, and then off to work on the building site, mostly being the donkey wheeling concrete. Very hard work on very little food. The civilian workers on there were, some of them were fairly good to us and passed on a little bit of food now and again to us. Then until a certain time, one evening after refreshing ourselves, one of the chaps that we'd befriended on the truck coming up, Fred Ball, and an artilleryman, and Harry Stibbs, his friend, Fred had come rushing into the room where we were, and quite excited, in fact, and he said, "I have just seen that we can get into party of 10 men, go to a German who was sitting in behind a desk on the square somewhere, register, and we can go out on working parties." So we thought that would be a good idea. We went and registered, and then the next day we were called upon. We were given a massive piece of bread and a tube of this cheese, enough to keep us a week than what we'd have been living on prior to this. And with two guards, we were taken to the station, put onto a train, travelled to the second largest city in Austria, Graz. And from Graz, we were disembarked off of this train and then onto a small line, a single line, which took us out on a westerly direction for 20 kilometers to a station called Krotendorf. That was near a town called Feuzberg, and a little further on, a town called Kefach. From Krotendorf, there was a young lad waiting for us. And with the guards and what we had to carry, he was there to meet us, to take us to our destination, which was from the station. We walked along the road for a certain distance and then took a turning and started to move uphill, up through, it was called Satzburg. It was a hill, a long, high hill, of which we had to climb up on this track. And it took us quite a long time to get to our destination. When we did, we had passed numerous of these small farms, which Austria is almost, well, in the hilly country, and some of the plains are quite numerous. And our destination there was a farm which was prepared ready for us, with 10 beds in one part of a brick building, of which was their cellar underneath, which was the ground. The room we had was the next one up, which was where the cider press was. And then the next room above was a room for the two guards. And that was their destination. And the next morning, there were a gathering of farmers, and they were there to choose by looks who they would have to help them on their farms. Now, from that point onwards, things began to get better for us.
So, did you then start working on Austrian farms?
Yes, that was just exactly what did happen to me, and it continued on to the end of the war, which we were very, very fortunate, really, to be in a place where we could almost, well, not completely free, you can't say that, but we were working on farms, small farms, very small farms, just family farms. And we were needed there because the men folk, most of the men folk, especially the young men, were in the forces. So we were working with perhaps one man and the rest of his family. It may be daughters with mother, and that was all. My first farm was with a farmer who was the leading Nazi situation, what would you call him? He took his orders from some part that he then controlled his area of farms to tell them what they had to give up of their harvest or animals to the state. Well, my first farm was, it was all right, because I was getting more food, but I didn't like the atmosphere with them because they were not nice people as far as I was concerned.
You mean they were Nazis?
Oh, yes, definitely Nazis, but not too unkind. Then I managed...
Well, in what way weren't they nice people then?
Well, they'd had the radios going and especially switched them on for special announcements when... They did this sort of thing by announcing the sinking of another so many thousand tons of British shipping and aircraft and all sorts of things, propaganda. The younger people, the younger children who they had to work hard, but there were two younger and one older boy who was the local Hitler youth leader. A fine boy, good looking, strong, big, but a Nazi. The other two used to, one especially, the small one, he put a lighted cigarette end down the back of my shirt one day, you know, and that burnt and hurt a bit. Stupid little things, you know, English prisoner of war, you know. But after gathering in their harvest, there were one or two farmers in the area who were struggling to get their harvest in. And so I was told to move over into one of these farms to help. Now, this was August, September, must have been in October, because we had early snows that that year, because if you remember, that was that terrible winter in the Russian front, and also not only in Russia, but also in Austria and the continent. And we were severely snowbound and very, very cold. At that early stages of our POW life, footwear was worn out, working in fields with leaky boots, with ice, snow, gathering in what we could get from the harvest, which got buried under the ice, digging out potatoes from underneath the ice, collecting in. Yes, the bad weather was... one of the worst times of POW life, because we didn't have the clothing, the footwear, and we were working in cold conditions with snow and ice. And it wasn't until the following March that things began to pick up, when Red Cross clothing, underclothing, boots, socks began to come through.
But you said that there was this unpleasant farmer, this Nazi you were with at first.
Did you
find the other farmers you moved to similar, or were they different?
Completely different and better. They were average, nice people, good, hard-working people, working the land for an existence. Prior to the war, they lived a really decent life. During the war, they had to give up so much of their food, losing their manpower, their young sons to fight the war, and they found themselves into difficult situations. But my second farm, from the Ortsbauernführer to the a place called Kreuz Blimel, and the owner was Hans Langmann. Now, he was a man of my age, with a small farm and a large family coming up, from babies up to the age of about 6-7. Hard-working, slightly crippled. He had a crippled leg. A very, very nice man indeed. Treated me with equality, is a good way of putting it. In fact, he has remained until his death last year a friend of mine since that time. And I've been back on several occasions to see him and the family. After leaving his farm, through I regret to say it, but it was with young children and the difficulty of life for them, the cleanliness of the place was such, was difficult to rely on a healthy life. I felt that it was not good enough for me, even at that stage. Things were getting better at that time. A vacancy occurred, strangely enough, at his mother's farm, which was only 200 or 300 yards away. The prisoner of war, which was a sergeant in the Royal Marines, Tom Casley from Cornwall, was taken away by the German authorities because, I think, of his rank. This being a vacant and a nice, no children, clean, I asked the German guards to transfer me from this farm to his mother's. At first, he refused, saying that he couldn't do that. I threatened the German with a bit of blackmail by saying, then I will not work anymore, because my rank enabled me to choose whether I worked or not. And so, after great thought and discussion with his colleagues, he allowed me to change my farm from Kreuz Blimel to his mother's. And there, I was the only man on the farm working for the mother and the mother's two daughters. And at first it was a rough passage, because one of the girls, who was doing most of the manual work, had Tom as a partner, as you might say, to work in. Tom was a big, strapping lad. And
this was a POW?
Yes, Tom Casley, the sergeant, the Marine sergeant. And Tom was taken away, and I managed to get there. And she didn't take to me at all. And it was through a little bit of a long period of which I can be very stubborn myself, even under those situations. I will not be browbeaten or taken advantage of, not by even in that situation. And so there came a time when she was in a very, very bad temper, which all we had to do was to go take the ox. We were working with oxen, by the way. Take the oxen down to pick up a cartload of bedding from the woods for the cows in the barn. And she got out the wrong side of the bed that morning. I was quite happy, and under the circumstances. And when I got the oxen down to where she was with the cart, she was in a filthy temper, and she upset me. Well, first of all, the oxen really upset me, because taking the oxen down, one butted me with his horn in the back, and I didn't like that one little bit. So I wasn't all that happy. But when I got there, she was arrogant, and one way and another. So I refused to be treated like that. So I threw the stick I had for the oxen down. I said, well, if you're going to behave like that, you can get on and do the bloody thing yourself, sort of thing. And I just walked off back up to the farm. Mother said, what's the matter? I said, well, Anna is in a filthy temper, and I'm not going to work with her, and I'm not going to be treated like that by her. From that day onwards, I would say good morning, yes, no, yes, do this, do that, and I say yes, no, good night, and that's all, nothing at all. I go back in the morning, do what I had to do, and at about some time during the morning, we had to cut hay and straw for chaff, you know, for feeding of the cattle, because they never used to put much cattle out to grass. They're mostly fed. And I had to be the donkey that put the double-edged knife chaff cutter. I used to be the engine. And she would be standing there feeding the engine, the machine, so that I cut, you see. Well, after a certain you wanted to stop and rest. And normally you'd sort of have a chat and one thing and another, but no, I wouldn't say a word to her at all. Just yes, no, or good night, good morning. This went on for a long time. And then one day after I was resting from chaff cutting, she burst out into tears. And she said, Bob, why don't you talk to me? I said, because you're a bit arrogant. Anyway, from that moment onwards, I let things go, and we were great friends. And that's how it was until 1943.
What happened in 1943?
Oh, they had a change from British to French POWs to work on the Arab area. And they put us down near the Yugoslav border, down in a different area altogether. I was very, very sad to go, because that was a nice farm.
What, clean. Were you still doing farm work on the Yugoslav border?
The new place, there was different altogether, because it was down on the plains, and there were two of us, Fred and myself, on one. There was normally only one, but this is a big place. This was larger farming, but the owner also had the local sawmill and the local flour mill.
What was the name of the place?
What's the matter with me?
Never mind. Oh, where was it near then?
Well, it was the nearest town would still be Graz, you know, but it was down on the south side towards the Yugoslav border. I'll get it in a minute. St. Martin's. St. Martin's in Solntal. That's the area. St. Martin's in Solntal, near Deutschlandsberg, Schwanberg.
Whilst you were doing this farm work in Austria, did you ever come across any East Europeans who'd been obliged to come and work?
Oh, yes. Yes. More during the period where the second, down on the farm where the sawmills, we did come across, in fact. Yes, there are one or two East right, not Russians. We didn't come across any Russians from Poland.
How were they being treated?
Well, they were treated fairly well, because where they went, they slept on the job, you know. They were treated like servants. They weren't in any compound like we were, or any locked up at night or anything like that. But, of course, there's no point for them to go anywhere.
What was your relationship with them?
Oh, friendly. Very friendly. When we really got, when you were asking this, we got met them. When, at the end of the war, we really met, well, I'll tell you about that perhaps later on when we come to the end, before coming home.
Well, perhaps we can go on to that, about how you were obliged, I think, to move.
From the Russians. You mean when the Russians are coming up from the Waslem? Yes, well, this was going on. We were working on this farm in St. Martin's in Somtal, and it came to the point when they had to move us away, because they were moving all POWs away from anywhere where there would be probably any fighting, and the Russians were advancing, so they had to take the POWs away from those areas. And when the time came in, I got the exact date, I think it was 4th of March 1945, we were told that we were going to be marched away from the this area, the same as what they were in the north and the other roads away from the Russian fronts, and more or less going into the interior of near Salzburg. So we were told, and the next one morning, we were not locked up that night, strangely enough. And the next morning, we were up very early, and it was a bit miserable, because we had quite a bit of stuff to carry around. And off we went, and we made our way from St. Martin's back up to where our previous farm was, near Krokendorf. Ligust, and from that point onwards we went further west, and over two mountain passes. One was a smaller one, but quite a climb up over, and then down over to Weisskirchen, Judenberg, and then up towards the other pass, which was Tauern Pass, and then going through villages all the way. If you want to know them, I've got a list of it in there still. But eventually we went to Wagrain, and finally to Saint Johann in Pongau, which was south of Salzburg. Now, the distance from when we started to Pongau was about 240 miles, something like that.
Bob Soller's Reel 6.